Welcome to Gag Me With a Chainsaw, a horror podcast about 80s slashers. I'm Corey.
And I'm Sarah.
And we love scary movies.
And a good night's sleep.
Oh, I love a good night's sleep.
You're bragging about all the good night's sleep.
No, I'm saying that because I haven't been getting a lot of them lately. So I'm just thinking about how much I would enjoy that.
You're remembering memories of past good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't had a good night's sleep in, I don't know, I can't count that high because my brain's all fried up because I don't sleep very well. But maybe our guest has had so many good night's sleep that she wants to tell us about. Our guest today is my friend Jamie. She's been a listener of the show going all the way back. A Nightmare on Elm Street super fan going back even further, and my best friend's sister for even longer than that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Jamie, like from the second that this show was conceived, you were like, I want to talk about Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
Yes, I told my sister to specifically tell you. That as soon as you did this, I wanted it to be.
And every 2 weeks, you're like, damn it, we're still not there.
I kind of figured it would take a while. As you guys mentioned, you wanted to do a lot of bad movies first so that you're not stuck at the end with all the bad movies. So
yeah.
I've been patiently waiting.
Yeah, there's definitely a system. Jamie, you want to tell us a little bit about your history with horror? Like if you have any early horror memories, what was it like at your guys' house horror wise growing up?
Well, my parents were the typical 80s, early 90s parents. So they did not police what we watched whatsoever. Mm-hmm. The only thing would be nudity. They would cover your eyes, but you know, brutal murder. They were like, oh, that's fine. So the first memories that I have were, my dad, like just putting on, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street was on TV a lot. Mm-hmm. Halloween was on and they just never really, said, oh, go into your room or you can't watch this. So I remember even watching Silence of the Lambs when I was probably like 6 or 7.
Really?
Yes. So, I mean, as far back as I can remember, these are the types of movies I would watch.
Yeah. So this is the house that horror built.
Pretty much.
That explains a lot of things about you, Jamie. What's your history with A Nightmare on Elm Street? So like you started watching it when you were a kid just because it was on. But what's the thing that like made you be like, this is my shit?
You know, the first memory I have of this movie is not the first movie. It's not part one. Mm-hmm. I have a very distinct memory of part 3, where Freddy comes out of the TV and he grabs that girl and puts her through the TV. I remember even having a very like vivid nightmare about it. And that's when me and my sister were really like little. And I like remember getting into her bed because I was so scared. But after that, I just got over it and I would just began to just love that specific series. And I just started watching all of them. We would rent them and me and my friends would watch them multiple times over and over again.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the part one wasn't the first one that I remember watching.
That dream must have been so fucking scary. You were like, it's happening.
It was, even to this day, it was so vivid because he came out of the small TV that me and my sister had in our room. Uh-huh. So I will, that's something I will never forget.
Oh my God. That was a bad one.
Yeah. And then another memory I have of the specific series is part 4, where the meatballs are talking on the pizza.
Oh, yes.
I remember that, even though that's obviously a more lighthearted memory of the movie, but those are the two that really stick out in my mind.
Yeah. How many times do you think you've seen the series?
Oh, I mean, the first one, I mean, I don't know if it's embarrassing to say that I've watched the first one probably over 100 times in the course of the past 30 years. Mm-hmm. And that's a legitimate number, probably 3 to 5 times a year for 30 years. Some of the other ones I don't watch very often. I I've probably only seen the second one 3 times.
Oh.
I'm just not a fan of that. It's so different from all of the others. Mm-hmm. I just never really enjoyed it. Freddy versus Jason, probably watched it once or twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the same thing with part 6, probably 10 times. But the rest I've watched a lot.
Which one is your least favorite?
I don't even think I would count Freddy versus Jason because it's like a comedy. It's just so different than...
Yeah.
So I would say the second one.
Mm-hmm. And is the first one your favorite?
Oh, you know, it's the first one. And honestly, New Nightmare. I think New Nightmare was so well done. It was just so far ahead of its time that it's kind of a bummer that it didn't really get the recognition that it deserved. But I really loved that one as well.
I agree. I'm like tied with those. I like them almost equally, I think.
Yeah. What are your other favorites?
Oh, I mean, the Halloween series, mm-hmm. of course. Although I don't feel like that's as strong as the Nightmare on Elm Street, because there are quite a number of the Halloweens that I will not watch. I don't enjoy watching them. Halloween Kills, for example. would never watch that again. So I would say Halloween, Scream. I've watched those many, many times.
Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of new horror movies other than like the mainstream stuff that comes out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go see a Conjuring, but I don't enjoy them that much. In the moment, I'm like, oh, that was fun, but it's not something I think about, and it's not something I'm like, oh, that was great, let me rewatch it. I would say the last one that I watched that I really enjoyed and could watch again was Smile.
Oh, yeah.
But I hated the ending. So yeah, that would probably prevent me from watching it often. But I did think that that one was a little bit, it didn't have the same premise as all of the other ones. I liked it. Mm-hmm. But because of the ending, it's one of the ones that I probably wouldn't watch too often.
Mm-hmm. Smile had some really good scary stuff in it.
It did.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting a lot from it.
Yeah, totally.
But surprised.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just am remembering the end right now. I don't love the end either. But a lot of stuff coming up to it, great.
And I think that's the problem with most movies that I watch now, horror movies. The endings are just terrible.
Yeah. Like,
and that's really the reason why I am always hesitant to watch anything new.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, oh, is it going to be good? Or am I going to waste 2 hours and the ending's going to be terrible?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't watch a lot.
Well, you're going to be watching less and less because you're about to drop a dream child at any moment. Is this baby a dream child, Jamie?
I hope my baby looks nothing like that child. I am having a girl, but still, a kid in that movie.
Okay, good. I was concerned. Well, as you know, Jamie, every episode we pick a movie from the Letterboxd list, every 80s slasher, An Attempt by John Hillman. And as we've been already talking about, our movie this episode is A Nightmare on Elm Street from 1984. Why was this movie chosen, Corey?
I demanded it.
She did. I said, quit the show.
I said, let's get A Nightmare on Elm Street going. We got a lot of movies in the series to watch.
We do have a lot in the series to watch.
And we've done the other big ones.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love the series. I agree, like, overall, really high quality. Like, if you average all the movies, they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah. I like this series a lot, too. My favorite of the big franchises is Child's Play. But this is my probably second favorite, just because Freddy's so cheeky. I like that about him.
Yeah.
It's good to do your job with a fun attitude, I think.
So Nightmare on Elm Street is a 1984 supernatural slasher, which is always fun. Written and directed by Wes Craven and produced by Bob Shea of New Line Cinema. We're Wes Craven fans.
Yeah.
Have any other favorites besides this one, obviously?
Scream.
Yeah.
Of course. last house on the left is a really crazy strong like opening.
Yeah.
Right? He did Red Eye and I really liked Red Eye too.
I don't know if I've ever seen Red Eye.
I guess it is horror, but it's more like thriller.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one, Jamie?
Yes, that movie's, I've seen everything that Rachel McAdams is in, and I specifically really like that movie because yeah, it's not really horror, but it's suspenseful. It's a thriller. And I feel like that movie was one of those movies where you're just on the edge of your seat the entire
time. Yeah, and they're on a plane, so you're kind of like, well, where are they even going to go? But like, it gets the job done.
Very effective. Wanting to see that movie like when it came out and never watching it. Maybe it's time.
Yep.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout out to People Under the Stairs.
Oh, hell yeah.
That movie is fun as hell.
Yeah.
It's so weird, but then like has a good message. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Message is that people shouldn't live under the stairs.
Yeah.
They should live above the stairs.
Yes. That's another movie that I watched so much when I was younger, and I just think, why did my parents let me watch this?
Was there anything that they ever were like, no, turn it off?
Oh, not that I can think of. I really can't think of a time when my parents were like, no, you can't watch that. Other than that movie, what was that movie? Powder. And that was only because of the director was there were some accusations, criminal accusations against him.
Oh, yeah. He was convicted.
He was convicted.
Okay. I don't know, but I just remember that was the only movie my dad said, oh, we're not going to watch that in our house.
Yeah.
That was the only movie.
Wow.
And that was obviously not regarding the content of the film.
Yeah. What are you going to do with your kids? Are you going to let them watch whatever?
No, I don't think so. I mean, at least not when they're very, very young. I mean, once they're teenagers, I am probably going to be more like how I was with my niece, where I would just tell her, yeah, we can watch this. But nothing like too brutal or graphic.
Yeah.
But all the stuff from the 80s, the 90s, Scream, you know, those kind of movies, I would absolutely let my kids watch.
Yeah. No Silence of the Lambs 7th birthday party is what you're saying.
Definitely not.
So going back to the cast, this stars Heather Langenkamp as Nancy. So this was one of her early roles. She would come back in the series and do part 3 and A New Nightmare, which I think are two of the best.
She also appeared in a ZZ Top video as Sleeping Girl. Uh-huh. So a little bit typecast. They were like, we love it.
That's funny.
She's so good.
So it's also starring John Saxon as Lieutenant Thompson. So he's in tons of stuff. Enter the Dragon, Black Christmas, Tenebrae, From Dusk Till Dawn, Blood Beach. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
We have Ronnie Blakely as Marge Thompson. You know, she had some roles in the 70s and 80s. Most notably, she was in Robert Altman's Nashville, which has been on my 2 watch list for a really long time. Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, of course. So Wes Craven originally wanted like someone big and burly to play Freddy. I think it's so funny. And Kane Hodder, who played Jason eventually in the series, in Friday the 13th movies, the later movies, he actually auditioned and was considered for this role.
I read that. It's funny how they just like were passing around like all these different guys until they were like, this is the right fit for you.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not the right fit for you.
No.
Kane Hodder. Well, I think Kane Hodder said that too.
Yeah.
He's like, they made the right choice. And of course, Johnny Depp in his film debut as Glenn, he just went to the set with his friend to audition and got the part. And his friend was Jackie Earle Haley, who ended up playing Freddy in the remake.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
We know what he's been in.
Yeah.
He stinks.
You got it. Alice in Wonderland.
Yep.
So this film was inspired by several newspaper articles from the 70s about refugees who they came to the U.S. as as refugees from Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and they were having bad nightmares. They wouldn't sleep, and some of them died in their sleep soon after. So Wes Craven read those and got the idea. Also, I guess the 1970s pop song Dreamweaver by Gary Wright sealed the story for him. It says, I read that it not only gave him an artistic setting to jump off from, but a synthesizer riff for the movie soundtrack.
Oh.
I didn't know.
The Dreamweaver that's in Wayne's World?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I'm surprised it was never in any of the sequels or anything.
Yeah. Right?
Or maybe it was. We'll find out. Oh, and also Craven drew some inspiration from Eastern religions. I guess that's what Johnny Depp's talking about in this movie.
Oh, yeah. He's talking about, like, you know, dream skills.
Yeah. And this was filmed for an estimated budget of $1.1 million. And grossed over $57 million worldwide.
That's a hell of a return.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Not bad. The film received critical acclaim upon its release and since has been considered one of the greatest horror movies ever made. It spawned a franchise consisting of 6 sequels, a television series, a crossover with Friday the 13th, lots of merch, and a not-so-great remake.
Yeah. And so many of, like, some of the best scenes of the Scary Movie movies.
Yeah.
This is another video cover that used to scare the fuck out of me at the Video Zone. Like, mm-hmm. I was not allowed to watch whatever. Not even, like, close to within reason. We knew a family when I was a little bit older where, like, these kids had it worse. But just to, like, kind of give you an idea that kind of, like, influences that my parents had around them, like, we only were allowed to watch one movie at these people's house, and it was Rudy, and the dad would run in and mute the TV whenever the one bad word came on the screen, and it was damn. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we didn't have it quite that bad, but we also like were not allowed to watch almost like any horror movies that weren't like classic,
yeah,
50s, 60s horror films. So, like, when I would see this cover at the Video Zone, I was like, what is that? Like, the tagline on it, I think, is she'll wake up screaming or won't wake up at all, which is like a great tagline. But on the cover, you know, it's like it's an illustration and it's her in bed and it like kind of looks like her, but like not that much. And the hand is coming over her face and there's like kind of a face, but it's not really Freddy's face. So I also really had no idea of what was in there. But I knew it seemed like bad news.
Yeah, I think this series has a lot of good covers. It seems like maybe they had the same artists for a lot of them.
Definitely some like heyday shit.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready?
Yep.
Are we well rested?
Not really, but we can move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever happens, happens. All right. So the film opens with an ominous sequence in which we see an unidentified individual visible only by his hands creating a hot new accessory, an old brown glove with sharp blades attached to the fingers. Then we get our title, A Nightmare, in bold red font, on Elm Street, in smaller white font. Perhaps you've heard of this movie. Tina, a young girl in a nightgown and bare feet, is rushing down a shadowy, steam-filled hallway. After being startled by a sheep, Tina runs into a boiler room amidst a horrible cacophony of wailing children, screaming babies, and incessant sheep's bleeding. She's stalked through the machinery by the glove's owner to a roaring furnace, where a figure lunges at her from behind, brandishing the glove. Tina awakens and sits upright in her bed. The entire episode was a horrible nightmare. Tina's mother comes into her bedroom, alerted by the scream, and notices that Tina's nightgown is slashed near her stomach. Tina grabs her cross off the wall and clutches it to her chest. And she's a Christian. The scene transitions into a dreamy sequence of a group of young girls in white dresses playing jump rope. As the girls play, they chant, One, two, Freddy's coming for you. Three, four, better lock the door. Five, six, grab your crucifix. Seven, eight, gonna stay up late. Nine, ten, never sleep again. The camera pans over to the street and we see Tina. Tina's best friend Nancy Thompson and Nancy's boyfriend Glenn Lance arrive at school in Glenn's cherry red 1958 Cadillac Series 62 convertible. A real dragon wagon, if I do say so myself.
You love cars.
I am big gearhead. Tina's boyfriend Rod joins them as they talk about Tina's strange dream. Nancy reveals that she also had a nightmare the previous night, and Rod reveals that he had a hard-on. He adds so much to their conversations. It's the worst when your friend has a boyfriend and you're just like, oh my God, this fucking guy. But they seem like, what's the word I'm looking for? They're going to tolerate him.
Yeah.
Like, he's okay. He does threaten to stab somebody.
I feel like that's one of the aspects of the movie that's a little unclear. Later on, there's like, I think, a picture of them all together.
Yeah.
Like, you're unclear. Like, are they all friends? And he got that soundtrack tape from Rod. So it's like, are they all friends?
Yeah.
Or do they hate him?
Yeah.
It's not very clear.
They're mercurial on him because he does things like pull switchblades on them. But they're like, he looks great in our photos where we're all sitting on a stoop. So Tina is definitely not amused at this point. That night, Tina's mother has gone out of town, so Nancy and Glenn decide to stay with her. Glenn pretends to be staying at his cousin's house by the airport by playing a sound effects tape as he talks to his mom on the phone. Works every time. This transition from the airplane sounds to, oh, some kids drag racing out front, to a major car crash with a woman screaming, escalating up to serious warfare that's explained away as the neighbors fighting. This always makes me fucking laugh. Like, it's so funny. Freddie himself is not very funny in this movie. Like, he's not that guy yet.
Yeah.
But there are moments in this movie that are really funny. I really like that because I'm like, I feel like you need all of that to mm-hmm. make a good movie. Tina gives more details about her dream, which makes Nancy remember details from her own nightmare. The girls discover that they both dreamed about the same disfigured man in a red and green striped sweater and custom glove. Just as Glenn is beginning to mansplain why that's impossible, they are properly creeped out when they hear sounds coming from the backyard. Glenn goes to check it out and is tackled by Rod, who came over to make up with Tina.
They got a toxic relationship going on, but she's like kind of into it.
Yeah. Rod and Tina go upstairs to her mom's bedroom to have loud sex, and Nancy and Glenn sleep separately downstairs. Nancy resists the idea of fooling around since she and Glenn are supposedly there only as moral support for Tina. Glenn says, morality sucks.
A line that Johnny Depp took to heart.
Oh, yeah. And later in the movie, Glenn says, I'll never stop wearing too many bracelets. And he was like, you know what?
So I have a question first. Is Rod hot?
Yeah.
I feel like he is most of the time, and then some angles I'm like, wait, no.
Well, he's gawky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie's like, I'm not weighing in on this shit.
So as all the teens fall asleep, strange things begin to occur. The wall over Nancy's bed seems to lose its solid form, and the shape of a human figure looking at her leans out of it. Nancy does not see it. Her eyes are closed in half sleep, and when she awakens, the form disappears. In the room where Tina and Rod are sleeping, Tina is awakened by noises at the window. Someone is in the backyard hurling small rocks at the glass. Tina goes downstairs to confront whoever it is. When she ventures out into the backyard, a familiar voice lures her into the alley. Finally, her stalker emerges. A man in a fedora, m'lady. a dirty red and green striped sweater. And the deadly glove with knives for fingers. He taunts Tina by laughing at her and whispering her name, and he walks toward her with his arms stretching further than humanly possible, spanning the entire alley, blocking her escape. This is so creepy. I wonder if people, like younger people, though, when they see this movie, they think it looks cheesy.
Like now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was going to say, I don't think so, but what the fuck do I know? I'm old as hell. But I think that it's really effective.
Yeah. It's unsettling.
Yeah.
We all get a first real peek at him when Tina begs, please God, and the man steps from the shadows, holds his razor-tipped hands in front of his scarred face and said, this is God.
This line is ice cold.
Tina retreats into her backyard and the figure leaps out again, this time from behind a tree. He slices off his own fingers and strange colored fluid spurts out. Tina tries to make it to her back door, but the man grabs her and they struggle on the ground. When she reaches for his face, she accidentally pulls off his skin and the man's exposed bloody skull laughs maniacally. Oh. It's cool. Cut to Tina in bed next to Rod thrashing around. She's dreaming, but the man seems to actually be under the covers with her. Rod awakens and pulls off the sheet. He can only see Tina, but she is being manipulated by some unseen force. Her stomach is slashed open, four claw-like wounds appearing all at the same time. Tina is dragged screaming up the wall, over the ceiling, and falls down, dead, into the bed, which is now covered in her blood. Awakened by the noise, Nancy and Glenn burst into the room to find Rod gone, apparently through the window, and Tina is dead. Man, so many good scenes already.
They must be the heaviest sleepers, though. Screaming bloody murder for how long?
Yeah.
And they don't come into the room.
Not to mention all the banging around while her poor body is being like yanked wall to ceiling. But they were probably just like, ugh, there they go again.
Yeah. The scene is so cool. It's one of my favorite, I think, in any movies, like favorite horror sequences.
Yeah. I mean, now maybe I just had a panic attack last night and I'm still jittery. But this whole sequence, I think, is still really fucking scary. Starting with that arm growing thing, I think that the skin ripping off is really fucking scary and looks really good. And then this part is just, it's wild. It's great. Totally agree.
And I love when she falls from the ceiling onto the bed and then just the splash of blood in his face.
Yeah. And when they come in, it's so much. Like, I don't know. I don't know exactly how much blood a person has in them. I guess it probably depends on the person. But she didn't look like she was that big of a blood bag. And there is blood everywhere. Yeah. Everything is soaked.
So at the police station, Nancy is giving her account of what happened to Lieutenant Donald Thompson, who also happens to be her father. Nancy's mother, Marge, and Lieutenant Thompson are divorced, and they greet each other with restrained hostility. Rod is the obvious suspect in the murder, but Nancy believes he is innocent. Although Rod has a reputation as a delinquent, Nancy knows he is not a killer.
Nancy's mom gives, like, the worst mom attitude about all of this. Like, Nancy is in big trouble for having a dead friend. Like, when Nancy says, Tina and Rod had a fight, but it wasn't that serious. This part almost, like, triggered fight or flight in me. Her mom goes, maybe you don't think murder is that serious. And it's just, like, fucking really? Like, you know that's not what I was saying, but okay, you got your little mom jab in. Like, can we move on, please? Making her explain herself.
As Nancy walks to school the next morning, Rod appears, barefoot and shirtless, and pulls her into some bushes. Rod swears to Nancy that he did not kill Tina, but before they can talk any further, Lieutenant Thompson appears with his men and arrests Rod, who is carrying his trusty switchblade. Nancy is offended that her father used her to capture Rod, and she storms off.
That really pissed me off, too. At school, the exhausted Nancy falls asleep in English class, and she thinks she sees Tina standing outside the classroom door. Tina speaks to her from a bloody body bag, and Nancy sees the bag dragged away by an unseen hand. She drifts out of the classroom and follows the bloody trail down into the basement. On the way, she's confronted by a female hall monitor wearing a red and green sweater, who scolds her for not having a pass. Nancy says, "Screw your pass," and begins to walk away when the hall monitor speaks to Nancy in a man's voice, brandishing the weird knife glove and cackling at her. Nancy goes down into the basement and is confronted by the killer, who is dressed in the same sweater and hat. His skin is horribly scarred, burned almost beyond recognition. And we don't talk about this enough, but his teeth are fucking sick.
That's true.
I mean, we're all about the face, but this is also horrific. Nancy asks him who he is, and he responds by lifting his sweater and slicing his chest open to reveal oozing green pus and writhing maggots. Corey, this is one of your oh no no's.
It happened again to me too. My compost. I hate it.
Well, you're frequenting maggot known areas at that point. Ugh,
I gotta dump it. I need to dump it like more often, I guess.
He traps Nancy in the boiler room and backs her against the wall, taunting her. "Come to Freddy," he says, and waggles his tongue at her. But just before he can slash her with the glove, Nancy purposely burns her arm on a hot pipe. The burn wakes her up, and she disrupts her English class by screaming and jumping out of her chair. Even though she is now awake, she has a large burn mark on her arm. Embarrassed and frightened, she leaves school for the day. She visits Rod in prison and confirms her fears. Rod is having the same nightmare, haunted by the same figure with the glove. She tells Rod that she knows he didn't kill Tina and heads home. I know that, like, her mom is like, "No, you shouldn't go to school." But nobody really, like, tries to stop her from going to school. Like, wasn't her friend just drained of all bodily fluids the night before?
Yeah. But she wanted to get it off her mind.
Back at home, Nancy takes a bath. She absentmindedly and sleepily sings the "Freddy's Coming for You" nursery rhyme before falling asleep in the bathtub.
What did she expect? She even had that little inflatable pillow.
Oh, yeah. She was setting herself up big time. Is this when her mom is like, "Do you want me to make you some warm milk?" We see Freddy's blades emerge from the water between her raised and parted knees in an iconic shot. Nancy is pulled underwater. By what? By where? Is really a question that I would like answered, because we can't see anything happening below the water. If you ask me, he's grabbing her by the coochie. I believe it's insinuated. She's dragged into some kind of abyss underneath the tub. She manages to swim back up and pull herself to safety. Nancy's mom, Marge, hearing Nancy screaming, bursts into the bathroom. But Nancy tries to pretend she simply slipped while getting out of the tub. But she was screaming for so long, too. It was like a long Scooby-Doo slip.
Maybe when they're screaming in their dream, they're not screaming yet outside of the dream.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
And this is the part where the mom says that hundreds of people are killed that way every year.
Slipping in the shower?
I don't know if she means sleeping in the tub or slipping, getting out of the shower. Either way, that seems like a huge exaggeration.
I don't know. I think that transition from, like, the most humiliating part of taking a bath is when you have to drain the water. And, like, you either stand up in the tub full of water, right? Or you sit there and let it all drain out. And then at the end of it, you're just sitting on the floor in your shower, which is, like, it's all bad. But that transition is a really dangerous one. Every time I have to do it, I'm like, oh, my God, I really hope this isn't the moment where I lose all of my teeth. So I'm co-signing Marge here. Hundreds of people a year die slipping from their naps in the shower. Marge sends Nancy to bed, but Nancy is now afraid to sleep. Glenn, who lives across the street, climbs in through her window. This is terribly convenient.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe that's why they started dating.
Oh, like, yeah.
He's so close.
Yeah. Location, location, location. She asks him to watch her as she sleeps. She has a plan to go find Freddy. Once she's in her dream, Nancy goes to the jail where Rod is being held and peers through the window into his cell. Before we move on, I would like to say that she figures out the rules of this, I feel like, so fast. Right?
Yeah, she's pretty smart with figuring things out, like waking herself up with the burn and like, okay, I know what I can do. She's just trying stuff.
Yeah. I like it when I think Glenn asks her, what happened to your arm? And she goes, oh, I burned it in English class. Yeah. So at Rod's cell, Rod is asleep and she can see the killer approaching him, walking right through the bars. Outside, Tina's corpse appears and calls out for Nancy. A bug crawls out of Tina's mouth and snakes slither around her feet. Nancy yells for Glenn, but her boyfriend is nowhere to be found. Freddie then appears and chases Nancy back to her house. She locks the door behind her and begins to run up the stairs, but they have turned into a goopy mess and her feet keep sinking.
Yeah, the melting staircase was Bob Shea's idea based on one of his own nightmares, and they made it using pancake mix.
It's like a nightmare classic. The sinking floors.
Yeah.
Nancy finally gets to her room and sees Glenn is asleep.
What a bastard.
I know. He must have gone to sleep right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be instant.
Yeah. She tells herself, this is just a dream. It isn't real. But at that moment, Freddy breaks through her mirror and knocks her down onto the bed. They struggle, but Nancy and Glenn are both awoken when her alarm clock rings. Nancy chews him out, and then she and Glenn hurry over to the jail to see Rod, as Nancy is convinced the killer is going to strike. Sure enough, before they can intervene, Rod's nightmare becomes real and an unseen hand twists his bed sheets around his neck, stringing him up in his cell and breaking his neck. He's lucky Freddy didn't grab him by this huge nocturnal boner he's always bragging about.
Yeah, this death is kind of maybe the least exciting one, but I guess he's in the cell. What else are you going to do?
Yeah.
So, Lieutenant.
Wait a minute. Is this what happened to Jeffrey Epstein? I feel like it's the one theory that I have not seen floated out and about.
Oh, yeah. We figured it out.
There it is.
Lieutenant Thompson is skeptical of Nancy's claims that she and her friends are being haunted in their dreams. As it appears, Rod simply hung himself. But after Rod's funeral, both Marge and Lieutenant Thompson seem to share an unspoken realization about Nancy's allegations when she describes Freddy. Still, they do not admit anything to Nancy. Instead, Marge takes Nancy to a sleep clinic where they monitor her body as she sleeps.
This sleep technician guy maybe needs a new job because he mysteriously and mystically says they still don't know what dreams are or where they come from. I feel like that can't be right. They have to have some kind of an idea.
They do, but there's a lot that they don't know about dreams. That's true.
Corey, that's so spooky. Is it like anesthesia where they're like, we don't know how it works or why it works, but it just does?
Yeah.
Is it the same?
They're still learning.
Oh.
Got a lot of ways to go.
Oh, brother.
So Nancy has a nightmare that sends the instruments haywire because of its intensity. And when they wake Nancy up, she has a gray streak in her hair from terror. Lucky. I love a gray streak.
Oh, yeah. Like Stacey London.
Yeah. There's another shock for all of them. Nancy is inexplicably holding the killer's fedora. It has a name written inside. Fred Krueger.
F the K.
Marge denies knowing who he is, and Nancy reacts angrily. Nancy tells her mother that maybe she should handle things the way she does, by getting good and loaded. Marge slaps Nancy, but then looks remorseful. She tells her, Fred Krueger can't come after you, Nancy. He's dead. Believe me, I know. She goes on to tell Nancy that she'll feel better when she has some sleep. Screw sleep, Nancy replies and smashes her mother's bottle of vodka.
She's getting really angry. She's like, screw this, screw that.
Yeah.
She's all getting all keyed up.
I mean, she has a good reason.
She's tired.
She's tired and her friend was brutally murdered. Yeah.
So Nancy meets up to talk with her man, Glenn. He tells her that certain Zen masters can control their dreams.
You know, dream skills.
Nancy asks what they would do if they met a monster in their dreams, and Glenn says they would turn their back on it. If you take away a nightmare's energy, it disappears. Easy peasy. Glenn asks Nancy why she's reading a book on booby traps. Nancy smiles and replies, "I'm into survival." Then Nancy returns home and sees that the trellis has been taken down and bars have been added to all the windows and doors. Once she's inside, Nancy's mother decides to finally tell her the truth. Taking Nancy down into their cellar, Marge tells her about Fred Krueger, a murderer that killed at least 20 children in the neighborhood. When Krueger was apprehended, an improperly signed search warrant caused the evidence against him to be inadmissible, and he was released from prison. As a result, she and Nancy's father, along with the other parents in the neighborhood, murdered Krueger on their own by setting fire to him.
Did the parents also stop him from brushing his teeth for 100 years?
I have a question. So her parents were involved in this, but did they have a kid that was killed? Like, did she have a younger sibling that was murdered?
The original story had all these kids were not only children, that they had siblings that had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming older siblings, or they would like remember, oh, I used to have a younger sibling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like that's what the story was supposed to be. I don't know why they cut that part.
Yeah. Well, I knew they cut that he was like molesting the kids.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
This isn't right though, right? What, Jamie?
I guess I never really thought about the time frame. Like, how long ago did this happen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I never thought about, well, yeah, did she have a sibling? All I could ever think about is the fact that if 20 kids are killed in the neighborhood, why did people stick around?
Yeah.
One kid goes missing, maybe two. But after that, if you don't move or actually watch your kids, I know it's the 80s and people didn't watch their kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 20 is a lot.
Yeah. One murdered kid, hey, that's bad luck. Two, well, that's a fluke. That's just crazy. Three-ish?
I mean, maybe he did them all like at the same time.
Like he drove them in a school bus, picked them all up around the neighborhood, killed them all at once.
Well, he worked at the school, right? Right?
Do they talk about that in this movie?
I don't think they talk about
not
that.
Not in this movie, no.
They just say that he took them to the boiler room, but they don't really say where, what he did.
Yeah.
How did he get access to the kids?
It was like too dark. They're not going there.
So if you murder 20 children, either one by one or all at once, do they just let you go because of an improperly signed search warrant?
Yep, they got to.
That can't be right.
I mean, considering how many dirty cops there are, that would never happen. They would make sure someone would sign that warrant in the right place. That would never happen. They'd be like, yep, we did everything right.
Yeah. Oh, we found the one that is signed right. Pick him up.
Yeah, and I wonder if her parents, that's what caused her mom to become an alcoholic, probably. She killed someone. And then they're like, got a divorce because they killed someone together.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, I'm just now thinking, well, her dad is also a lieutenant. He's a cop. Was he involved in the investigation that caused Freddy to get let go?
Yeah, this is probably his fault.
Maybe that's why they're divorced.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they say is like the things that couples argue about the most, right? It's like finances, religion, like improperly signing a search warrant or vigilante justice.
Yeah.
Historically, I think everybody knows this, will tear a couple apart.
Yeah. So she says, he's dead, honey, because mommy killed him. Marge then reaches into the furnace and removes a dirty bundle. Unwrapping it, she produces Freddy's glove, which she took the night they murdered him.
She was like, oh, I'm just going to keep this evidence at home.
Yeah, why? Nancy realizes that Freddy is out for revenge, somehow reaching from beyond the grave to murder them in their dreams.
Again, she is a smart cookie. Mm-hmm. After learning the truth about the killer, Nancy calls Glenn. He answers the phone in his legendary crop top, and she tells him about her plan to bring Freddy out of her dream and into the real world. Then Glenn can hit him with a baseball bat or something. She tells him to meet her on her porch at midnight. Whatever you do, she says, don't fall asleep. He, of course, falls asleep immediately. Just before midnight, Marge takes a break from swigging vodka to tuck Nancy in. As soon as her mom leaves the room, Nancy pulls out an entire plugged-in coffee machine from underneath her bed and pours herself a cup.
Very funny.
Her mom is not going to notice it's gone until tomorrow. She calls Glenn, who is fast asleep, but his father refuses to go get him and even leaves the phone off the hook. Nancy then receives a taunting phone call from Krueger. She rips the phone out of the wall, but when the phone still rings, she answers it and hears Freddy say, "I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy." Just then, the bottom of the phone transforms into Freddy's mouth and he licks Nancy with his nasty tongue.
Yeah, he's very sexually menacing.
And I know his breath stinks. Nancy realizes that Glenn is about to die, but she can't rescue him because her mother has locked her in. Across the street, Glenn is asleep in his bed when Freddy's hand emerges from underneath him and he is sucked into his bed. A geyser of blood erupts from the bed into a horrible fountain all over his bedroom ceiling. This scene just goes on and on and on. Like, again, how much blood is in this guy? Is there blood coming from other people that are under the, like, wherever this place is under the bed? I don't know. But it is a wild scene.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanics of it are really cool. We can talk about it a little bit at the end, but like, just when you watch it, you're just watching the blood dripping the wrong way is executed so well.
Agree. Another great scene.
Nancy realizes she is now alone and must face Freddy or die. Calling her father, she tells him that she is going to go and get Freddy and bring him out of her dream. And she wants her father to be there to arrest him when she does. She's like, do it right this time. Lieutenant Thompson doesn't believe her, but he patronizes her so that she will go to sleep. He asks another officer to stand guard outside the house. He's like, get me my most stupid officer.
Yeah. Now it's on. Nancy sets up a number of booby traps in the house in order to give herself an advantage after she captures Fred.
She's really going to get him when he steps barefoot on those Christmas ornaments.
After saying goodnight to her mother, who is now completely drunk, Nancy falls asleep and dreamwalks down into her basement. There, she finds a door which leads down a long staircase into another basement. She continues to climb further and further downwards, following ladders and stairwells until she's in Freddy's boiler room. Freddy is nowhere to be found, and time is running out before Nancy's alarm goes off and wakes her up. But finally, he attacks. Nancy runs away and takes a flying leap, and because it's a dream, she lands in her front yard. Love that. Freddy follows, calls her a bitch, and Nancy jumps on him and holds on. Her alarm goes off, and Nancy awakens in her bed, alone. Just when Nancy thinks she might actually be crazy like everyone else does, Freddy attacks. She breaks a coffee pot on his head and locks him in her room. Then she yells for help, but the cop that her dad sent to watch over her is not so smart, and she is stuck inside. When Freddy gets the door open, he is hit by a sledgehammer that Nancy rigged, and he tumbles down the stairs.
Also very funny.
Freddy chases Nancy through her house and down into her basement, where she sets him on fire. Lieutenant Thompson breaks into the house, but he and Nancy are shocked to see fiery footprints leading out of the basement. They follow the trail upstairs and find Freddy struggling with Marge in her bed.
Oof, this is not good. Marge is very flammable these days.
Yeah.
She's a pickle.
Nancy hits him with a chair, and her dad covers him with a blanket to put out the flames. When they pull back the blanket, Freddy is gone. Marge is nothing but a charred corpse and the body disappears into the bed. The supernatural manifestation shocks Lieutenant Thompson, but Nancy is basically like, bitch, I told you.
Yeah.
She asks to be alone for a moment, and when Lieutenant Thompson leaves, Freddy appears, rising up out of the bed. Nancy has a plan. She turns her back on him this time, remembering what Glenn told her. She curses Freddy, telling him, I want my mother and friend again. I take back every bit of energy I gave you. You're nothing. You're shit. He lunges at her, but her lack of fear renders him powerless, and he vanishes into thin air.
When she goes, I want my mother and friend back again, he goes, what?
That's what I said, because I'm like, I don't know if that's allowed.
Well, Nancy knows the
like,
rules,
they're
Corey.
Already dead. Like, where'd you get that? Glenn didn't say anything about that. I noticed she said my mother and friend. She said nothing about Glenn.
Oh, yeah. Or Rod.
Yeah. You can keep the boyfriends. So Nancy leaves the bedroom, and suddenly she finds herself outside, dressed for school. Marge stands on the porch and sees Nancy off to school in a loving way, telling Nancy that she is going to quit drinking. Glenn, Rod, and Tina pull up in Glenn's car to take Nancy to school. When Nancy gets in, the convertible roof suddenly slams shut over their heads. The roof is red and green. Oh, no. The windows go up and the car drives off with all four of them trapped inside. While three girls in white dresses playing jump rope are heard chanting Kruger's nursery rhyme. Marge seems oblivious, waving goodbye to the kids, when suddenly Freddy's arm smashes outward through the small window in the front door. In a bizarre moment, Marge's entire stiff body is pulled through the tiny window and she is gone. That's the end. Do you guys like the ending? You were talking about endings earlier.
I like that specific moment when she's pulled through the window, mm-hmm. but the actual ending of this movie, I feel is a little lacking. I think it could have been a lot. I don't know. It should have been more like the endings in like the sequels. Mm-hmm. Like it's just very much like, oh, well, she turns away and he has no power. I mean, there's not a fight. They're not in the dream world. So I do feel like the ending in the movie is a little lacking.
Yeah, this wasn't the original ending. The original ending was supposed to be, if I'm remembering right, I believe that it was supposed to be like, well, that's that. Like, she did it. That was all there was to it. And the producers were like, well, I don't know, maybe think about doing it like this. And they kind of kicked a couple of things back and forth before kind of settling on a middle ground with this ending. But Wes Craven did not intend for this movie to have sequels.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on the ending, too. Like, it makes you question things like, well, then, what is this?
Yeah.
Is this a dream? Did she not beat him?
Yeah.
To me, it seems like it was a dream within a dream. That she didn't beat him and then she leaves to go outside and she's still in a dream.
Right? Because she does kind of transition just like straight outside. It's like that happens and then suddenly she's stepping out onto the front porch. Like, is this more of like when she jumps out or when she jumps earlier, we were talking about, and lands in her front yard? Like, mm-hmm. is this more of that? But then the more layers that you add onto it, the more like questions, I guess, like, is she dead now too? Are they all trapped in this place? When I was reading about it, it kind of seemed like they kind of wanted it to be like, oh no, everything went back to normal for a second, but then she realizes that she didn't actually beat him.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, that does kind of make sense, except for one part that always bothers me. When she answers the phone and then Freddy's mouth and tongue are there, mm-hmm. she's supposed to be awake.
Right.
How is he able to do that if she is awake? So that kind of makes me think it's more of all of it, that portion was a dream. And then it's another dream when she walks outside, because how did he do that if she's awake at that point? Glenn's sleeping, mm-hmm. but she's not.
Yeah. And she didn't bring him out yet. Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, she hadn't brought him out.
Maybe she like fell asleep for 5 seconds. I've done it.
Maybe
recently.
I've been awake for many days at that point.
I don't know. That's kind of like what happens when you see these movies so many times, mm-hmm. that you're like, hey, wait a minute. And I have to tell myself, it's just a movie and I should really just relax. Right? Like,
mm-hmm. It's fun. Some things I noticed this time were they mostly call him Fred. Not Freddy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Fred. And I don't remember how much Glenn kind of sucks.
He's like, not helpful whatsoever.
No.
And he's like,
and he's not supportive.
He's not even that sweet to her. Like, maybe he has like, they have like one little cute moment and that's it. I'm like, eh.
Yeah. And he's not smart. And he can't stay awake for shit.
Yeah.
This group of kids are like a real all-American group. Like when we first meet them and they get out of Glenn's car and then they meet up with Rod and they're like hopping down the street together. They're all like real clean scrubbed and suburban, and like even their hooligan friend isn't too terrible, you know, but yeah. You need those kids to be like that, I think, because it's like, oh no, if this could happen to them.
Right?
Like, what chance do the rest of us have?
I'm sure all the neighbors were like, oh my God, bars on the window.
Yeah. Yeah, we're moving.
Well, that's the part when Glenn's dad, you know, he's looking at the house and staring, and he's like, I feel like she must be some kind of psycho. It's like her friend was just brutally murdered.
Yeah.
It's only been a few days.
So harsh.
Yeah, and it's like, if she's nervous and her mom's nervous about her safety, it's like, why would you think she's a psycho? Obviously, she's going
through trauma. Because these parents were like, take care of your kids. That's fucking crazy. I put a roof over your head. You want bars on the windows now? We're kind of dealing with some classic themes in this movie about parents being unable to understand the problems their kids are facing. You know, the adults in this movie, it's like we've talked about before. I think, gosh, where did we first start talking about this? It's like a running theme through most slashers that have kids in them and not adults, is that like the parents are worse than useless. Like these parents even help Freddy on accident, like multiple times, you know, and the kids are just left in these places where you can't find help in the place where you're supposed to be able to get help. You try to talk to your parents about this and you don't get anywhere. They tell you that you're making it up. And it leaves these kids having to fight these battles on their own, where they have, I mean, generally not in Nancy's case, for whatever reason, she's a fucking prodigy when it comes to dream rules. But like generally they're in a place where it's like, how does anybody know how to deal with this?
Yeah.
But you know, they're not like kids movies, but they kind of are.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what her parents could even really do to help in this circumstance other than to not have done vigilante justice in the first place. But that ship has sailed.
Maybe not put the bars either and give her the key to the door because she could have burned to death in the house. There's some things you could have done differently.
No, for sure. Yeah, her dad could have slapped the cuffs on old Fred Krueger a second time and hauled him in.
Or maybe gone downstairs to get Rod a little bit sooner instead of giving her shit and then the guy not being able to find us. You know, there's things that they could have, her parents could have done.
Yeah.
They could have been like, okay, sure, yeah, let's go down and check on him.
Yeah, they're just kind of like, pulling on their collars a little bit when this guy's name keeps coming up again.
Yeah.
But still, it takes a really long time for anybody to go, maybe she's telling the truth. She knows about this thing that she's not supposed to know about. But she says, oh, it made me think of that old nursery rhyme, like that jump rope rhyme. So this is neighborhood lore?
Yeah, if 20 kids died in that neighborhood within your parents' lifetime, you would have known.
Yeah. I would be like, well, clearly these freaky Fred Krueger stories got in my head, and now I'm having Fred Krueger dreams.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, that's why I wonder how long ago did it happen?
Yeah.
Because it's like, you would think even if you were, you know, 10 years younger, Nancy's, you know, a teenager, that you would remember. Mm-hmm. No. So it's like, did it happen 20 years ago before they all had these kids? Like, what exactly, you know, when exactly did it happen?
Yeah, it would have to have been long ago enough that Nancy doesn't remember that she had another sibling, for example, or like none of the kids remember that they had other siblings,
mm-hmm.
you know,
or that their friends got murdered when they were
yeah.
kids.
Like, yeah.
Oh yeah. Susie from down the street. I remember when she got abducted and murdered.
Yeah.
So it had to be a long time ago.
Along with those 19 other kids on that one afternoon. We also sort of deal with the morality rules here that we all know about in slashers. The kids that we know for sure they're fucking get slaughtered and or falsely imprisoned. But I'm not sure what Glenn's crime was, just staying up past his bedtime to watch Miss Nude America.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there are, I never really think it's like, oh, the bad kids are punished. But it seems like there are some like sexual themes about growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I take it, like Fred's always like sticking his tongue at Nancy,
yeah.
like calling him her boyfriend, like,
and there is the scene with the glove.
Yeah,
like I was joking that he gripped her by the puss, but like,
oh yeah, that bathtub scene, man. Yeah, so I don't know, I think there's something there.
Yeah,
just like that's just another threat, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of implies that like the threats aren't always the things that you think they'll be. It's like themes of the lines between your conscious and subconscious, you know, and where those lines blur, waking and sleeping. Does this ever happen to you guys? Do you ever like randomly have a little memory and then you're like, wait, did that happen? Because I feel like I remember like 5 things from my whole life, like really good. You know, and then everything else every once in a while, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. But sometimes I'll have like a little like flash of a memory and I will think to myself, did that happen?
Yeah.
Or did I dream that maybe?
Or are you just remembering it like differently?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It does have some interesting stuff in it about those concepts. You know, if you die in your sleep, you die in real life. Mm-hmm. How many people a year die that way? Probably not that many. Just those guys that were in the news that one time. So I have a question for you guys. Okay. If Freddy is invading your dreams, what's he going to find? Like, what kind of circumstance? Like, is there a reoccurring dream where Freddy is going to find himself there? And you're like, not now. I have other things to worry about.
Because I am an anxious person, I have a lot of stress dreams.
Uh-huh.
And so many of my dreams are dirty bathroom dreams.
Oh, my God.
My entire dream is trying to find a clean restroom. So Freddy would be like, what the hell is this?
He probably loves a dirty restroom.
At least once or twice a week, that's the type of dream I have where, yeah, the entire time I go into the bathroom and like, or there's like no stall doors, or the toilet's really high or really low or just overflowing. And I just spending my entire dream just trying to find a clean bathroom.
The toilet's really high.
I'm like, I can't sit on that one. Or like the enclosure door will be like just so, so small, like a few inches. And I'm like, this isn't covering anything.
Yeah, that's fucked up. Once or twice a week?
At least.
I have dreams like that too. I think I've said before, I used to have a lot like based on trying to make a phone call and not being able to do it. Like like back in the payphone days, like it wouldn't work, or like my fingers just would not hit the right buttons.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, Freddy can probably like come out of the phone again, I guess.
Yeah. I used to have this frequent dream that my mom enrolled me back in high school. And I was like, you can't enroll me back in high school. I'm 30. And she was like, well, you start tomorrow. And like that I have to go back to high school and I'm in the hallways and all the other kids are so mean. And I would like fight with these groups of teenage girls. And in some circumstances, we would fight, like fist fight. And I had that dream all the time. Well, I woke myself up one night fucking like karate chopping everything off my nightstand because I was fighting this group of mean girls in the high school that my mom had re-enrolled me in. So I don't know what Freddie's liability there would be. Like, you help me deal with them and then you and I can do what we need to do. Or whatever, but he's comfortable in a high school. He'd probably be like, great, how many kids can I murder?
Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking, like, when they dream, they're either in the boiler room or they're like someplace they actually walk to, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
In this one, the dreams are more realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nancy's doing some serious lucid dreaming. I always wish I could do that. I never remember to do it, though. Even in my dreams where I'm like, wait a minute, I might not be awake. I never remember to go that next step and go, well, great, what are we going to do? I just go, oh, okay.
They say you should journal like as soon as you wake up about your dreams.
I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Then you'll never be a dream master.
I'm never going to be a dream master.
Was there a point in your childhood where you realized that you could pass away in your sleep?
Is that really true?
Well, I don't know, but I think that's why this movie is kind of scary. Because before you watch it, you never, well, at least I didn't because I was young when I saw it. I never thought like, oh, I could go to sleep and never wake up.
I don't mean if you die in your dream, you die in real life, but like just on a very basic biological level.
Yes, just generally. It's not something that I feel like I thought about until probably seeing this movie where I was like, oh, well, that could happen. Like, yeah, I guess you go to sleep and not wake up.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's something that only like I really thought about or if it's what other people think about.
Well, I definitely thought about it because I heard the words, if I die before I wake, quite a bit. So I was like, what does that mean? So yeah, that was a concern for sure.
We didn't do that prayer. My mom had a different one. So that's probably why I didn't think about it.
I always associated it with like the good way to go. Like, hope you're old and you die in your sleep, right?
Oh, man, what if all those old people were really Freddy victims?
He hates old people and kids.
Both ends of the spectrum. But that's interesting that your awareness of that concept came from this.
Yeah, from what I remember. And I think that is why I was like, okay, I really like this movie. And I actually was like, oh, well, this movie's kind of, you know, scary for that reason. When you think about it, it's like you go to sleep, you dream, maybe you don't dream. It's like you don't even realize when you fall asleep. And that's like a concept that does still give me anxiety.
That also gives me anxiety. Sometimes I wake up from a nap that I did not intend to take and think, oh, it'll be really easy to die one day on accident. So, yeah, that kind of freaks me out, too. That's true. Dang. Man, Jamie, you were wrestling with a lot when you saw this movie. Ratings?
Sure.
All right. Okay. We do have a Malton this time. Lenny said, you won't leave me out. 2.5 stars. Several teenagers discover they're all having nightmares about the same character, scar-faced Fred Krueger. Imaginative premise given routine treatment, but this box office smash led to a handful of sequels and a TV series. Good info, Leonard.
He wasn't a huge fan.
No. 2.5 stars. Not the worst, but not great. 2.5 bones from Video Hounds. Feverish, genuinely frightening. they call it that. True. In the tradition of Friday the 13th, Jason, and Halloween's Michael Myers, Elm Street spawned a Freddy phenomenon and an army of razor-clawed trick-or-treaters at Halloween. I feel like you don't see a lot of Freddy anymore.
Yeah, that one's like, you either have to do the makeup or you buy a mask, but the mask doesn't look as good. Mm-hmm. I see Freddy still.
Way easier to do Michael Myers.
Yeah. I was Freddy like 4 years ago because as a kid, my parents never wanted to buy part of my costume.
No.
They're like, no, we had to make it. They wouldn't buy me the gloves. So finally, like 4 years ago, I'm like, I'm going to be Freddy finally.
That's called healing your inner child. we've got a Joe Bob. Quite a few stupid white people get clawed to death by a pasty face geek zombie. I don't know how pasty he is.
Pretty rosy.
Pretty rosy. He says 4 stars. Joe Bob says check it out. So I would say everything in this movie really clicks. Like, castings are great. Script is tight. The effects are, as we've been talking about, just really, really good still. The rotating room effects, that's how Tina dies, and the blood geyser are extremely impressive still.
Yes.
Like, those are dangerous stunts. And when they did the blood room, they turned it the wrong way on accident, and it had to be turned manually. So everything went haywire. Like, all the blood got into the lighting and the electrical equipment, and one of the technicians got electrocuted. He lived, I think, but it was a mess. They were able to get the shot. They only had one chance to do it, obviously.
Well, yeah. You don't want to clean that up.
No. the camera and the director, either Wes Craven or if they had somebody like running that unit, would be strapped into place to match the rotation of the room. I think that's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still think so many great set pieces, like some of the best ever.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't really have much else to add on top of it.
I think Nancy's a really fun final girl. Like, she's so mm-hmm. proactive, which you see sometimes, but not all the time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Robert Englund.
Yeah.
As Freddy is like, what more do you need?
Yeah. To have a character with that kind of longevity, like, you've got to be doing something right for sure. Jamie, you want to give your final thoughts before we do our ratings?
I mean, I think I kind of said it all. I mean, it's a great, great concept. It's one of those movies that I wish I could go back and actually see it in theaters for the first time.
Oh yeah.
Feel that reaction. Because it was, I mean, it's just so different. There's movies that I think about. I'm like, oh, I wish I could have seen this when it first mm-hmm. came out
yeah.
before everyone talked about it. Mm-hmm. Because even probably before I saw it, I'm sure my sister probably told me about Freddy, kind of spoiled it, I'm sure, before I had even seen the movie. So this is just one of those ones that I wish I could see for the first time.
Yeah. I always say that about Psycho. Like, before, because with these huge movies, you have a cultural awareness of them that you can't help but have it seep in a little bit before you see them.
Yeah, I feel that way about The Exorcist. I feel like I would like it more.
Yeah.
If I wasn't so exposed to it, like, before the first time I saw it.
Yeah. All right. Jamie, you want to give your rating?
Sure. You would think, given how many times I've seen this movie, it would be a 10 out of 10 for me, but it's not. I would say it's a 9 out of 10.
What could it have done to earn the extra one for you?
There are some moments where the acting, I feel, is kind of bad, and it's distracting.
Yeah, and there's a certain character
yes.
who I'm thinking of.
Yes. And it really kind of, if this was like 10 years ago, I probably would have said 10 out of 10. But the more I've watched it and now I'm older, I'm like, oh, that really like kind of takes you out of it in certain scenes because of the acting.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, the ending itself is a little slightly disappointing.
Yeah. Whose bad acting is distracting for you?
Rod's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking Marge a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, well, she's a little bit of a rough character.
She has some odd choices. I'll just say that. So I would also rate it a 9 out of 10. I almost want to give it a 10 out of 10 just because like the scenes that are amazing are really, really amazing. But yeah, overall, I think it's a 9 out of 10 for me.
I also struggled with this between these two. I'm going to go 9 as well.
9's across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not like I'm like, oh, I know what I would do differently. Right. But a couple of the things is like, yeah, you can kind of see that there was some discussion over the end. And the end isn't as strong as it could be, like we've talked about. I do love when the mom goes through the window, though.
It's funny.
It's fucking crazy, too. Like, why her body like that?
Did you guys also notice when Freddy's on fire, it's like obviously not Robert Englund. The guy was like way stockier.
I didn't.
There's a few little mistakes, like when Nancy falls out of down, and you can see like the bag that
the crash
she
pad. Yeah.
I'm like, there's a few little things. Man, it's not too distracting though.
They have been having a hard time hiding those things since the beginning of the movies, man.
Oh, and when she goes up the stairs and her foot's going to go in, you can see that it had already gone in before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But other than that, it's just a few little things.
Their TVs weren't as good then. I wonder if maybe they couldn't see that stuff as well.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. Interesting, though, that like just this whole street, the whole town was like, we all killed this guy, but like, shh. Like, nobody say anything. So they were able to like cover that up successfully or evade arrest.
Yeah.
But they had to let him go. They had to let Freddy Krueger go on a technicality.
But do we know? I know in the reboot, it's talked about a little more, but it's like, do we know how many parents were involved with this? Like, was it a lot? Was it everyone whose kids affected?
That's what they said in this movie. It was the parents of the kids who were killed. And then, and she said, and me and your father. So I was like, so you guys just like jumped in or did you have a kid? You don't mention them at all.
Well, so that is a lot of people to keep a secret.
Yeah, exactly.
40. Well, if all 20 kids had two parents, then yeah, that's 40 people.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's going to be tough. And like, oh, they got so far.
Yeah, I know some of the sequels, like, they try to build out the lore, so we'll have to revisit this topic.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Anything else we want to cover?
Yep.
No? Thanks for coming on, Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate your history with this movie. I like that you've seen it 100 times. I think that's really fun. Do you still enjoy it like every single time so much?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a comforting movie to watch for me, which is, I know it's weird to say because of the type of movie.
We get it.
You know, since it's something I can just listen to in the background. Yeah, I mean, I still enjoy it. Like I said, as I've gotten older, there's little things that I notice more, like the acting, which kind of, you know, distract me more. Mm-hmm. But in general, yeah, it's just something that I can put on anytime. I'll be like, oh, this was good.
Yeah. You're always happy with your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. Well, maybe we'll have to get you to weigh in on more down the line.
Just not the second one.
The second one, 100%. What's our next movie, Cor?
Our next movie is Dressed to Kill.
1980. Oh, Michael Caine?
Yeah.
All right. I like that.
And have you seen it?
No.
I didn't know you haven't seen it. Now I'm excited.
I just know things about it.
Okay.
I'm going to start it and be like, wait. That's why I know things about it. All right. Well, as usual, make a donation to the Bakersfield Burrito Project and help us feed our hungry and unhoused neighbors here in Bakersfield on Cash App and Venmo, Bako Burrito Project.
Yes. And leave us a rating mm-hmm. or a review mm-hmm. or we'll haunt you in your dreams.
Yes.
And follow us on Instagram at Gag Me With The Chainsaw and on Twitter at Chainsaw Podcast.
Yep. And you can call us 661-454-7499. What kind of fucked up dreams are you making Freddy watch? Jamie, he'd probably see that big toilet and be like, I don't even know what to do with this. He's going to say, you do this twice a week. All right. Is that it?
Yep.
We're good? All right. Thanks again, Jamie.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you all next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on Gag Me With A Chainsaw with your hosts, Corey and Sarah. Music by White Bat Audio. Find us on Twitter at Chainsaw Podcast and on Instagram at Gag Me With A Chainsaw. Until next time, unpleasant dreams.